From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 24th day of July, 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And then later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, a government subcommittee has some ideas regulators might use to fix convergence in the soft red winter wheat pit. And the Senate thinks it might be just okay to modify the Bumpers Amendment, prohibiting USAID from helping develop crops in other countries. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. And then, while I did not have an answer yesterday about how to get your acre paperwork done and still wait for the August 12 crop production report before making a decision on whether or not to enroll, I do today, and you'll hear it right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled in Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures from the wheat pit were down 15 and a half cents in the nearby September at 516 and a quarter, December at 543 and a half, 15 and a half lower, and the March wheat at $5.62, down 15 and a half cents. In Kansas City, September at $5.49, 12 and a half lower. From the corn pit in Chicago, 316 and a quarter, a settlement price down 10 and three quarters, December at 327 and a quarter, 11 and a half lower. And the March corn at $3.40 and a half, down 11 and three quarters on a Friday. May futures at $3.50, 11 and a half lower. And July corn down 11 and a half at $3.58 and a half. August soybean futures 2.5 cents lower at $10.21. September at $9.51 and a half, down a dime. November at $9.15, 17 lower. January at $9.22 and a quarter, down 17. And the March soybeans at $9.25 and a half, down 18 cents. August bean meal up 20 at $3.23.20. The September down $1.30 at $2.99.70. August soybean oil $33.89, down 78 cents. September at $34.06, down 77. August live cattle futures $84.52 and a half, 50 cents lower. And the October at $89.75, down 35. August feeders at $102.55, up 17 and a half. September 25, higher at $102.35. And the August lean hogs at $59 and a nickel, $1.90 lower on the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. September crude oil futures at $68.05 a barrel, a settlement price 89 cents higher. August ethanol at $1.56.5, down 3 2/10 cents. Natural gas at $3.68 1/10, 13 and a tenth higher. And the RBOB gasoline at $1.91 3/10, just about unchanged. August heating oil, diesel fuel, $1.77 7/10, 1 2/10 cents higher. And the August propane, up 2 8/10 at 79 8/10. Gold futures July contract at $952.80, $1.70 lower. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 9,061, currently down just about 8 points. And the U.S. dollar at 78.75 is down 0.04. The CRB at 251.91 is up 6.86 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. From our own Scott Oltolf, he says tonight in northern and western sections should be mostly cloudy with showers and thunderstorms likely. Elsewhere becoming mostly cloudy, showers and thunderstorms possible late. Lows will range from 63 in the north to 69 in the south. And then tomorrow, Scott says, mostly cloudy skies, a chance of scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Those will be especially early in the day. And then highs will range from 76 in the north to 91 in the deep south. The extended forecast is the temperatures will continue the cooler than average trend across Illinois and Indiana for the final week of July, and by all indications into the very first week of August. We'll take a more complete look at the agricultural weather forecast at the bottom of the hour with the folks from the Illinois State Water Survey.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzalo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana, joins us today. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hello, Todd.
At 2 o'clock this afternoon, USDA released its latest cattle on feed report. It now shows on feed as of July 1 at 95%. The average trade guess was 95.2%. Placed in June at 92%, trade guess 92.9%, and marketed at 101%, was on the high end of the range, but still within it, the average trade guess at 99.4. See anything that surprises you in those numbers?
No, not too much. You know, we were trading $83 to $84 this week and last week, and given the placements in the marketing's numbers and given the biannual cattle report we got out today, too, I would think, Todd, that if the hogs could maintain their recent lows and not have to make new lows next week, that maybe we could eke out $85, maybe even $86 in the cattle trade next week. And there is some heat that may be coming back into the southern plains, and if we would see that, that may additionally allow for a little bit better price action next week in the live cattle.
You mentioned given the biannual report. Did you get a chance to go through any of those numbers?
Yeah, you know, no big surprises there, just looking at the main headline numbers. The calf crop came in at 35.6 million head. That was right on the money as far as estimates. That's 99%. You know, that lends support to the feeders, but the market had anticipated that low of a number. Most of the other numbers, however, were top heavy or on the top end of the range, so maybe that could take some luster off of the report some. But by and large, we got confirmation today that we're dealing with a 35, 36 year low in terms of cattle numbers, and I got to think that that's going to continue to underpin the cattle as long as the other meats don't drag it down.
This must be a trend that started some time ago if we are at 99% of last year.
Yeah, about 2 years ago, I think. Yeah, that's usually how it goes, is you hear about these massive market-ready supplies hitting, and that was in that 2006-2007 time period, but guys weren't replacing, and we finally found the bottom here. With the ethanol plants coming back online and DDG starting to be a little bit more ample supply, and the break in the feed grain prices, I would think that most of the cattlemen will be back and trying to rebuild their herds this fall, especially if their hay crop ends up being pretty good in the southern plains. That's a big if, because we've got a pretty significant drought going on in Texas and in parts of Oklahoma. But if we can keep the feedstock supplies high enough and the prices of feed grains cheap enough, we probably have hit the bottom as far as taking the cattle herd down.
Do the numbers for the cattle coincide with normal business trends in the cattle market or the cycles? And is there a bigger cycle that you can see there? You talked about a 35-year low in cattle numbers.
No, I don't think we've ever had anything like we have this go around. I think that when we had the poor price action in the 70s, the last time we had such a big reduction in the cattle herd, I don't think the economic side was being hurt nearly as bad, and I think this would be a bigger cycle as far as liquidation phase. We've talked about this a little bit about the dairy herd. I think that's probably something else that's going to have to be watched. Those guys may not be done liquidating. I think I would probably go on the bias that the beef cattle guys are done liquidating, but there may still be some dairy guys that have to get out before the end of this year if we don't keep the prices of feed grain low, or if we don't see the milk prices recover pretty quickly.
Well, it certainly looks like there ought to be dairy cattle that'll be coming into the beef market, and probably have been a good portion of what's been putting beef into the system.
Yep, that's
as
right.
They liquidate those under the CWT
yep, that's right.
program. That dairy buyout is big. If you visit their website, you can see how big it is, but they're buying out an enormous number of dairy cattle to try to get milk supplies back under control.
Exactly. I think there, again, you're talking about a historical issue, and you know your dry milk price and your demand overseas has always been very, very good, and you know it would be nice to maybe change the contract specifications a little bit so that you could get more global in terms of your supply and demand, because it sure feels like that we're letting go of too much milk right now, and that we're going to be needing that milk in a global mindset. We're going to be needing that milk in 5 or 6 years from now, and you know, you wonder whether you're going to be able to turn on the spigot as fast, because usually you just can't do it in the cattle.
And let's turn our attention to the grains and the oil seeds. While we had a couple of good days after USDA made the announcement that it was going to recalculate the corn acreage in 7 states and sorghum in 2, Illinois and Missouri, I suppose they weren't quite sure what happened with those corn acres in southern Illinois and want to know whether they went to sorghum or not. We finished lower for the day today, and actually, if you look at the numbers for the week, we were lower for the week in lead option or in the harvest month for corn and soybeans.
Yeah, and led by the wheat once again. I showed September wheat down 25.5 this week, and you know, it's interesting because when we came in this morning, we heard on our conference call in Chicago, and we heard from other sources that maybe this NAS revision is not going to be that big of a deal, and maybe it's just verification that the acres were planted, and I just don't know how it could be spun that way, but it seems like that was how it was spun, and that's how it was traded today. The longs were very few and far between. It was very clear that they had no desire to step into the market after yesterday's rally, and especially in corn, because the beans and the wheat showed no leadership at all. I guess, you know, obviously we talk a lot about the wheat, maybe too much, I don't know, but I was very disappointed with the wheat this closing day here, because we were right back close to that 512 low in September. We got really good news. I mean, about the best news you could get from the CFTC. The subcommittee is working more towards the mercantile exchange's idea of trying to slowly change the contracts as the September and the December futures go off the board, tweaking the convergence issue, not trying to force the index funds out. That came out last night. The conference call, I thought, based upon the press reports I saw, looked overall very, very supportive of the idea that we weren't going to get this big floodgate opening of index funds liquidating longs. I would have thought we could have been 15 higher instead of 15 lower today.
Any final word on the marketplace before I let you go?
I think we'll be watching those outside markets. They did put in a nice week this week, Todd. We're hoping that that will translate into a nice week. I think the weekly corn market, one good thing, the lead month weekly corn did hold a trend line by staying above 311 in the September. Maybe we can build upon that. Our consultant's also giving us a heads up on the weather that mid-next week he may start to see a ridge build in the western corn belt, centered in Colorado, so we'll keep you updated on that.
Well, that could put a little heat into Nebraska and Kansas and maybe take the luster off that good Nebraska crop, I suppose.
We're not hoping that, but we want higher prices, don't we?
All right, thanks much. We'll talk to you later. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. Happens each and every Friday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
In agricultural news, a government subcommittee said Thursday it will recommend regulators consider a variable grain storage rate to narrow the problematic gap between cash wheat prices and futures if other previously approved changes fail. The group held its second public conference call on Thursday to identify a set of possible solutions to improve convergence. Cash prices and futures are supposed to converge when futures go into delivery, but cash soft red winter wheat prices have lagged well below futures for at least 2 years. Under the proposal, which has yet to be formally written, storage rates could increase or decrease from month to month, depending on spreads between the nearby contract and the first deferred contract month. The subcommittee is expected to send its recommendations to the full committee in late September, following the expiration of the September contract month. The Senate is considering a modification of the Bumpers Amendment, which forbids the use of taxpayer dollars by the U.S. government to help develop crops in other countries that could compete with U.S. production. The Senate Agriculture and Foreign Relations Committee staffs are now trying to write a modification of the Bumpers Amendment that would allow U.S. aid to help develop crops in the poorest countries as identified by the World Bank, but would require that the aid stop if the country becomes a commercially competitive exporter in that crop. Farm leaders have indicated that they will not oppose the modification as long as the aid goes to the poorest countries. A Canadian trade group is in the process of negotiating a deal that would allow greater competition for public procurement of goods and services for both Canadian and U.S. companies. Canada's trade minister says the goal is to enable firms from both sides of the border to bid on provincial, state, and city contracts and not just for federal jobs. And major automakers have asked the Environmental Protection Agency not to approve higher blends of ethanol in gasoline. The Alliance of Automotive Manufacturers said increasing the blend rate to beyond E10 would affect vehicle emissions, performance, and durability. The trade group represents BMW, Chrysler, Ford, General Motors, Jaguar Land Rover, Mazda, Mercedes-Benz, Mitsubishi Motors, Porsche, Toyota, and Volkswagen. EPA has until December 1st to decide whether to allow a higher ethanol blend beyond the current E10 level. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report in Commodity Week, that second program you can hear this evening after 6 o'clock Central Time on our website at willag.org. It's willag.org. Commodity Week is our weekly look at what happened in the marketplace. Now, up next, you know, FSA offices around the nation are desperately worried farmers will wait until the very last minute to sign up for the Average Crop Revenue Election Program, also known as ACRE. I'll have some advice on how to go about waiting to the last minute and still getting the job done. Sign up for the ACRE program is a three-step process: ACRE election, farm enrollment, and proving yields. Forget proving yields, that won't need to be done until next year, says Stan Wilson of Illinois FSA. About the first two steps, many producers around the nation will want to see the USDA statewide yield scheduled for release August 12th at 7:30 Central Time a.m. before deciding to enroll in the ACRE program or to stay in the old farm program called DCP or Direct and Countercyclical Payment. This leaves the FSA offices and farmers in a bind because they only have 3 business days to complete the paperwork and to get the proper signatures for either program. Illinois FSA's Stan Wilson has this suggestion.
So what I suggest that producers do and counties advise producers do is one of a couple things. And it all depends on if they have signature authority or they're enrolling their own farm or if they have to go to Georgia or California to get someone to sign. Farmers typically enroll in DCP program, you know, 90-some percent. 96-98% enroll into the DCP program. So I recommend that they go ahead and file a DCP contract, and they have that on file and have it perfected. Then if they're uncertain about ACRE, what I recommend they do is they get an ACRE election form and an ACRE enrollment form, and they get those signatures, and they make their final decision on the 12th, 13th, or 14th, and if they determine that they want to enroll in ACRE and not DCP, they bring in the ACRE election form and the ACRE enrollment form, and that will cancel that existing DCP contract. Now, remember, presenting us with an ACRE election form cancels the DCP contract. But if you don't give us an ACRE election form and the ACRE enrollment form, they're 2 separate forms, it's a 2-step process, what you do if you only give us the ACRE election form is you cancel the DCP contract, you've elected ACRE, but you've not successfully enrolled the farm into the acre program.
And if the farm enrollment is not there, then no farm payments will be made, period. Here it is again. Most farmers are already signed up for DCP. If not, Stan Wilson says to fill that paperwork out, have it perfected and on file at the FSA office. That means all the signatures are there and legally correct. Do that prior to the August 12 crop report. Before you go in and do that, call the FSA office and have them prepare the acre election and acre enrollment forms for the farms, too. Take those home. Again, get the proper signatures in a perfected way, and then leave them at home until a final decision on whether or not to enroll a farm an acre is made. Now, once the acre election form is turned in, the DCP is canceled, although another DCP form could be filled out prior to August 14th deadline to reverse that decision. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Friday afternoon. On the line with us to take a look at the cash grain market is Bruce Bostard. He's the general manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company's 10 locations. I think it's probably still 10. You haven't grown again, have you?
Yes, we have. We're 11 now.
Somehow I knew that there had to be another one in there. Where'd you pick up?
Piper City.
Well, Piper City. Well, Piper City is known for many things and now for one of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Companies, too, I suppose. Tell me about cash grain in your area.
Things have been very quiet with the board selling off, with flat price going down. There's still some old crop corn sitting out here trying to decide what to do now. New crop, I think, is just basically going to sit on the sidelines now at these kind of flat price levels until we get into harvest and see what's actually out there.
And as you look out across, I suppose from your office, what do you see? You think farmers are satisfied with what's there? Are they very much worried?
It has good potential. How's that? The potential is there. It looks a lot better with the low spots, the rounded out spots hidden in the middle of the field in general. Other than that, the populations are good, but it's behind. We have, you know, all sorts of maturities out there, but anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks, 2 to 5 weeks behind on the corn. Beans are there. They're finally growing a little bit. Of course, beans, you know, we make in August, so they kind of just put their time in until we see what happens in August there.
Well, what does the 2 to 5 weeks mean to you as an elevator person? What does that allow you to do, and what does it mean, you think, for the marketplace?
What it means for the marketplace is that they have to fill the gap in September. New crop bushels aren't going to be coming on as early. It's going to push harvest back later instead of being, you know, we're immediately following on the heels of Labor Day. It's probably the 21st before we start seeing anything really as far as receipts. A lot more dryers running is what it will see.
That's probably right. Give me the numbers for the day from you.
314 on nearby corn and 1010 on soybeans.
Do you know what Piper City's known for, at least in the insect world?
No, not in the insect world.
I have it for you. It is ground zero for the changed western corn rootworm.
Okay.
All right. Talk to you later.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye. That is Bruce Bostard. He's with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Friday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason, back in just 2 minutes when we'll take a complete look at what's happening in the world of agricultural weather.
It's National Tequila Day. Tequila was first produced in the 16th century near the city of Tequila by the Aztecs, long before the arrival of the Spanish in 1521. When the Spanish ran out of their own brandy, they began distilling tequila, North America's first indigenous distilled spirit. By the way, it is a common misconception that tequila is fermented from cactus. On this day in agricultural history in 1938, Nestle introduced Nescafé instant coffee in Switzerland. Originally, the product was developed to assist the Brazilian government in solving its coffee surplus problem. Instant coffee is made with a blend of beans mixed in a blending drum, roasted, ground, and then brewed in huge percolators. Then the coffee is sprayed into a heated stainless steel dryer to remove all the water. In 1997, Scottish scientists announced they had cloned a sheep with human genes. And in 2005, Richard Dahl died. Dahl, a British scientist, was one of the first to link cigarette smoking to lung cancer. Based on a 50-year study, Dahl found that almost half of persistent cigarette smokers were killed by their habit. And that's this day in agricultural history.
I'm Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Friday afternoon. Jim Angel, Illinois State Climatologist, is on the line with us to talk about the agricultural weather forecast for the weekend and a bit further out. Good afternoon to you, Jim.
Good afternoon.
I want to turn back the clock, actually, instead of looking forward at the moment, because it's been awfully cool. How much cooler than normal have we been in the month of July?
Yeah, if you look at July so far, we are about 6 degrees cooler than average. And on top of that, we really haven't seen that much hot weather. You know, here in the central part of the state, we really haven't seen any days above 90. There's been a handful reported in the southern part of the state, but that's well below normal. Usually in July, we get about 10 or so in central Illinois. So it's certainly been cooler, milder conditions, and that's great for the corn so far. But it's certainly been cool, not only in Illinois, but pretty much the Midwest and the Great Lakes and on out to the East Coast has been on the cool side for July.
Have we been wetter than average, too?
Yes, we've been, and except for this week, we've had some pretty good rains in the first half of July, and right now we're just a little bit above average for this time of year. We've gotten a little over 3 inches and through the first three-fourths of July here, that's about just a little bit above the average. But it's a little drier as you go to the north of us. The folks up in Minnesota, Wisconsin have definitely been struggling with drought conditions. But things look pretty good here in Illinois.
In which parts of Minnesota and Wisconsin are we talking about? Primary growing regions on the western side of Wisconsin, eastern and middle part of Minnesota? Where are we at?
Yeah, but some of the driest areas are in pretty much all of Wisconsin, kind of spills over into parts of Michigan, much of Michigan, northern Indiana, and also into Ohio a little bit. So those areas have been running on a little on the dry side, but probably the core area of the drought has been most of Wisconsin and much of eastern Minnesota at this point.
You don't use the word drought lightly, so I suspect that's actually truly a drought then?
That's right, yeah. If we're looking at the U.S. Drought Monitor, they have that area up there categorized as being a drought condition.
And what do you see for the forecast in the states of Illinois and Indiana over the next 10 days?
Well, if we look at the forecast from the National Weather Service, they really pretty much see a continuation of the trend of cool conditions through Illinois, Indiana, and pretty much the Great Lakes region out to 14 days. Precipitation-wise, we got a little shot of our chance of rain on Saturday. That's probably the last chance for a while. Maybe we get on later on to next week. There might be another chance or two. But I think it's going to be relatively dry for the next week or so.
Anything else that we need to talk about before I let you go?
Well, you know, if you look at the outlook for August, they expect to see these cooler temperatures to continue on into August as well.
Thanks so much, Jim.
You're welcome.
Jim Angel is Illinois State climatologist, and he joins us from his office on the south side of campus here in Urbana-Champaign. He's located not very far from the Assembly Hall and from the football stadium. That's where Jim Angel is located as a state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You've been listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Don't forget to tune in for Commodity Week at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.